This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. We will be, of course, revisiting that issue. My thanks to Dr. Tabali. And we'll keep you up to speed on the latest when it comes to COVID-19. I had a great conversation yesterday with Dr. Bill Donahue. You might be familiar with him. He hails from the Catholic League for Religious and Civil Rights. You can find him at CatholicLeague.org. And I had seen a piece that was written. And it was called, it was on the hate, you know, what was the actual title? I'm trying to go back and remember the exact title. I think it was called Hate America. That was it, Hate America. And the Hate America campaign is in high gear. And I thought, look, this is a conversation that we should probably talk about. Is it true? And how do we remedy that particular problem? You know, for several decades right now, the U.S. has been under assault. I think you would agree with that, right? And that assault has not come from the outside. What we're seeing in the streets of America today, we're seeing in our educational institutions, what we're seeing, you know, come out of the media, there's no question that there is a battle of ideologies going on. No foreign invader is on our shore, right? But, you know, a great nation can fall from within. We're in a special time. I really do believe that. We've been infected with an ideology that is totally contrary to our founding principles. I really believe that. Our founding fathers, by turning over in their graves, those founding principles. I think it's important to read your American history to understand what this great experiment, you know, what this great nation was built upon. Those founding principles insist that the state has to be kept in check, that the God-given rights of people and even the rights of minorities of the people, and even they got to be preserved, and that the citizens of the country have to take an active part in their own self-governance. And that's not what the assailants believe. They believe that the state is pretty much all-powerful and, you know, the only, you know, kept in check by the elite and the powerful. They also believe that our rights are not given to us by God. I believe our rights are given to us by God. The state, they think, you know, they can be taken away and they can be given by the state, you know, and they believe that the citizens are totally ruled by the government and not the government by the people. I heard Tony Perkins from the Patrick, what is that? The research, what research council is he with?
Family Research Council.
Family Research. I'm zoning out on him. Family Research Council. He was talking about religious freedom in the country. And it really is not a priority in the Biden administration. We're seeing a whole new set of, I shouldn't say new, we're seeing a much more vivid incarnation now of ideology. We're seeing the transgender movement. We're seeing the Equality Act that they want to pass. You know, we're seeing pro-life, pro-death legislation being passed. I talked about, trying to lift all restrictions on the abortifacients and abortion pills right now. We're seeing religious freedom not being held in the proper place. It's not a priority in this administration. And Mike Pompeo was interviewed, I believe, by Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council. Listen to their exchange. I'll play a little bit of this for you just to give you some context.
Tony, sadly, it appears this administration is putting that on the back burner. We had it as a top priority. A central part of our America First philosophy was that nations that permitted every individual to worship as they saw fit, to practice their faith, like America, had the idea that the state's not going to establish a religion, but everyone has the right for free exercise. Those were healthier nations. They were more prosperous nations. And America was more secure because of that. This administration has not taken that approach. They've indicated they're going to not have the ministerials that we held. They took down from a central place at the State Department the Unalienable Rights Commission work that so many had delivered such good product that mattered to human rights around the world. It's really deeply disappointing. They've put the Green New Deal at the top of their agenda. They have, in some sense, traded religious freedom for a sense of climate change as their number one priority as they move around the world talking to other nations.
And that was Mike Pompeo, and I think he's right. There's been a shifting of priorities, really. And we're seeing a belief that race is the defining issue of our day. Even after the election and the re-election of our first, you know, black president, we're seeing it in the cultural and the corporate elites who try to control the discussions taking place on social media. We're seeing it in the educational elite who are trying to teach even our youngest children that people are defined by the color of their skin rather than by the content of their character, as Martin Luther King Jr. so famously said. So is there a movement right now afoot? Are we seeing this Hate America campaign underway? My next guest, Dr. Bill Donahue, says yes. He says Hate America campaign is in high gear. I invited him back today to give us some perspective on this. I think it's an important conversation to have. I think you should be aware of what's unfolding, because so often we look at things in slivers and we need to look at the big picture. We see the trees, not the forest. Doctor, it's good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for your good work.
You know, this attack on our country really is, if you ask me, a communist attack. It's insidious. And the fact that it's not coming from the outside as much as it is coming from our own citizens, that's concerning for me. Tell me what you're seeing right now, and do you see these communist overtones to what we're now seeing?
Yes, and it all begins in the academy, in higher education. Back in 1985, 1984, somewhere around there, the National Association of Scholars was founded. I became one of their board members, and I was on the board of directors for 20 years and ran the Pennsylvania chapter as well. This is a group of men and women, not all of whom would agree on matters Catholic, for example. It's not a Catholic organization. Yeah. We're just concerned about the pursuit of truth and what the academy was founded for. That brings us together in a more conservative light, but we may have vigorous disagreements over religion, but certainly not the role of religion. My point is this: political correctness, this left-wing ideology that's been taken over, we saw that back in the 1980s. It's only gotten worse. Now, we've tried at the National Association of Scholars. Some very good work has been done. They've set up alternate accrediting institutions and the like. But the left is in control and has been in control of higher education for decades. What's new is not the corruption of the universities and the local college campus. What's new is the corruption of the corporations. Yeah. That big tech, that big pharma, that the Fortune 500, that Wall Street is now, Goldman Sachs and others, are now on board, Coca-Cola, Delta, they're now on board with the most left-wing interpretations and distorted, malicious interpretations of American history, and that they want these lies to be taught to children is astounding to me. You know, you mentioned American principles. Yes, the founders were not Pollyannish.
No.
They knew that our society was far from perfect, but they laid down the principles in the Declaration of Independence, which four times mentions that our rights come from God, which you correctly mentioned. It's mentioned four times in the Declaration of Independence. And, of course, today's idea is that the zeitgeist, the spirit of the times is, no, the government gives you your rights and we can take them away. That's a very dangerous path to go down.
You know, I was reading your work, and you dated this in an article that, you dated to a recent article back to 1960s, but it wasn't Joe McCarthy dealing with this back then in the 50s. Wasn't he dealing with that? We saw McCarthyism. Give me a historical perspective on this.
Well, in terms of McCarthyism, you know, you had one guy who was absolutely right, by the way, about the communists. Even Nicholas von Hoffman and many others have now admitted it. Some of his tactics may have been rather boneheaded, but he was right that there was an infiltration in the State Department, in that case of communists. Now they don't call themselves communists. They're right. Just left-wingers. They're Marxist. Many of them are very proud Democrats, which that was not true of the Democratic Party that I knew when I was younger.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was back in the 1960s. It all exploded with the anger over the war in Vietnam. We had the civil rights movement, the sexual revolution. A lot of things came together, and a swelling of the population, the baby boomers, who were the biggest risk takers in every society, are the young people. And that spilled over into anger in the streets. I remember even in the 1980s, Jean Kirkpatrick, she was a brilliant foreign policy advisor to President Reagan, she talked about the Hate America campaign. She was talking about it, coming from outside the society mostly, but she saw it also inside. She was a Georgetown professor. And now, of course, we, you know, as I mentioned, the multiculturalism, which became big in the 1980s, hey, hey, ho, ho, Western civilization, Western culture's got to go. That's what Jesse Jackson was chanting in the 1980s on the campus of Stanford University. This was never about, well, we should appreciate other cultures. This was always an assault on Western civilization. And my question to the geniuses on the college campuses, the professors, is this. Okay, folks, you get rid of Western civ. What's left? Who gave us freedom? Who gave us the ideas of freedom?
Right.
Who gave us the ideas that we're all equal before law and before God? Where did the ideas of due process and justice come from? They didn't come from Latin America or from Africa. They didn't come from the Middle East. They didn't come from Asia. That's right, they came from Europe with all of its faults and then over to the United States, okay? Now, we should be celebrating this. It's a journey. We're not all there, but we have the roadmap. We have the principles to get there, which is why if we are such a lousy, racist country, why is it that the whole world is crashing our borders, wanting to come into this lousy, racist country? I wish the great minds on the campuses would answer that for me.
It's so funny. I just received an email, in fact, as you're saying that, from a guy named Hugh. Hugh, thanks for the email. He says, for decades, the fifth wave has immigrated into the U.S. Note the art of war, communist Chinese tactic. What do you make of that comment?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's always been these, what, fifth columns, as they call them. There's been some outsiders, and they exploit the people. Remember what Matt Lennon said, you know, he talked about the liberal Democrats back in the United States at that time. He says they were useful idiots. Yeah. There were a lot of people who may have been naive. They weren't mean. They weren't out to sunder America, but they were being used. And there's and you've got a lot of places like, well, under Stalin, under Mao. We know the penetration of in this country. It's in the universities. But now it's become mainstream. It's no longer some fringe group, some fifth column out there being funded by that. It's being funded by the Arcus Foundation, by the Ford Foundation, by the Rockefeller Foundation. It's now mainstream. It's not some nefarious foreign force anymore. No, no, it's in the colleges and universities. It's in mainstream. It's even in the military.
Wow.
It's amazing how far the left has penetrated with their insane ideas that there's no such thing as truth. The man can be a woman, a black person can be a white person if he thinks he is. No, there is such a thing as truth. And once we give that up, there's nothing left, folks. We have to constantly, we are Catholics, we are motivated, we are ordained to tell the truth and not to shade it. That is what we're asked to do, to tell the truth.
Amen to that. My guest today, Dr. Bill Donahue. If you want to join us, I only have him for a few minutes today. Feel free to sound off or ask your questions. Get in on the conversation. It's 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. I'll go to the calls in just a second. So, Doctor, what do we need to do? Does full-scale revolution need all of a country citizens to be on board to work? I mean, we are a fractured country right now. We are divided politically, ideologically, morally on so many different fronts. How do we heal? How do we bridge that divide?
Well, one thing we don't do is we quit. All right.
Amen.
As far as I'm concerned, it's easy for me to say as a Catholic leader because I do this for a living. But we had a board of directors meeting recently, and I said to them, listen, we have two choices. We either fight or we quit. We're going to fight. And if anybody thinks it can't get worse, you're very, very mistaken. It can always get worse. Now, there's some good news on the horizon. I mean, God bless Mark Levin. He's got a book coming out called American Marxism. It's the number one bestseller in the country. It won't be out for 2 months. Now, there's an appetite out there. Even in New York City, and I'm there every day, even in New York City, things are beginning to slightly turn around. They have de Blasio's last day is December the 31st. He's term limited. They have the Democratic primary for mayor next month in June. The two leading candidates, Andrew Yang, he ran for president, and Eric Adams, who's a former police chief and the Brooklyn Borough president, both of them are supportive of the police. So the ones who are not supportive of the police are getting no votes at all, at least in the polls. There's also been a pushback on critical race theory, which is a racist idea that, as you correctly said, you're judged by the by the color of your skin, not by the content of your character, as Martin Luther King said. But there's a pushback on that. You've had people in New York pulling the kids out of pricey schools, Megyn Kelly being the most famous, but there's many, many others. And it's happening around the country. And there are states passing laws saying only biological girls can compete against biological girls in sports. So it's taken a while. I think they push people to the limit. And I am not at all discouraged. Even though we have our backs up against the wall, there are some good things happening. People have to pray, and people have to be involved. These are not contradictory attributes. You have to do both.
I often quote Sister Lucia de Santis when she wrote that the final confrontation will be over family and marriage. Satan hates family. He hates marriage. And I also think as parents, but we have as primary educators of our children, Doctor, we really need to instill those values. I think the culture right now, the elites, those who are behind this movement, they understand they need to target and redefine this next generation. As you so clearly pointed out, we're seeing in our educational institutions, not just the higher levels of education where it used to be, but we're seeing it now in grade schools. We're seeing the cancel culture. We are, we're seeing this whole transgender movement, this gender identity confusion take place. We're seeing it come out of the media. We're seeing a lot of different places. So parents really need to take responsibility, not abdicate their roles. Let's take a call or two for you. The number here, if you want to get in, 888-914-9149. My guest, Dr. Bill Donahue, always enjoy his passion and his clarity. Mike is listening in Chicago. Mike, you're on the air with Dr. Donahue. Good afternoon.
Hey, Drew. Great show. Hey, Dr. Donahue. God bless you both. I saw an interesting documentary, Drew, on the Holocaust not too long ago, where they were talking to survivors. Mm-hmm. And one of the survivors made a very interesting comment where she said that the Jews in Europe at the beginning of the war and at the beginning of the camp situations were always saying, it won't get any worse. If this is as bad as it gets, we can deal with this. And yet it got increasingly worse. And my point is, and I want to echo, Dr. Donahue's thoughts, is if we think that it can't get worse, if we think that this spiritual battle that we are in cannot get worse, it will. And we will end up being victims if we don't fight.
Yep. Mike, I think it's a great point. And Doctor, I was thinking, gosh, she's in parallel with exactly what you said. It can and will get worse if we allow apathy to prevail. What's the greatest challenge we face? Is it that we're apathetic, or is it this slow desensitization of what's happening in the culture? I've seen how attitudes towards marriage have changed since the Obergefell decision. You take a look at polling before and right around the time you take a look at it today, it's radically different when it comes to those issues. And I think people get numb and very accepting of this.
Well, yes, there is a desensitization. I don't know if it's so much apathy. I think people feel overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I talk to people every day from all walks of life, and a lot of people say, what's happened to our society? What can I do?
Right.
It's happening so quick. That's the other thing, and I'm a sociologist. I mean, societies change, and the vector of change goes this way, that way, and sometimes it moves slowly. It's at a gallop pace right now. Things are happening in the last 5 to 10 years. That I've never seen. I mean, you could see some of the trajectories going back 50 years, but the quickening of the pace, and in part, we have seen right now with the Biden administration, it's astonishing. People denying that we have a problem at the border, people warring on Catholic hospitals, denying that men are men. This is taken. This is being sacrosanct at the highest levels of our society, and they're moving at a very quick pace. The average American, of course, he goes to school, he goes to work, he takes care of his kids, he wants to take a break, he goes out and he golfs, he has a job, he has commitments to God, to country. He gets overwhelmed. He thinks most people are normal. What is happening to this? It's the elites. Now, the elites always think that they know better than we do. Believe me, I was a college professor for many years, and some of the dumbest people I ever met in my life, and dumb in the sense that they didn't understand nature or nature's God.
Amen.
They lived in this fanciful, delusional world where you could make up a reality in your head. Well, that's what they do in the asylum, except now they're doing it in the academy.
That's so funny. It's so true. All right, let's go back to the phones. We will talk to RJ next. He's in San Francisco, Doctor, and he wants to talk with you. RJ, thanks for joining us.
Yes, I've always followed you, Phil, and I'm an old timer myself here. I And you remember, I'm sure, the days when they were building bunkers in the backyard for communists getting ready for the fight. And anybody that did anything wrong toward the country that were found out to be communists, they would be put in prison. And that's the way it was back then. And nowadays, they have just slowly eased up on us and got us here in this position. And I can see what's happening. I can see from experience with it. What do we do? How do we fight back? Back then, we put them in prison.
Okay. RJ, thanks. I'll let the doctor respond.
Well, I think for one thing, I think people need to get involved in school boards. A lot of things happen at the very local level. You can't get everything done nationally. And if not you, I'm not saying you, sir, and maybe people just say, listen, I'm not the right person. You know people in your neighborhood who's the right person. Everybody knows them. You know them at church. You know them at school. You know at work. You got to get people involved because the left has filled this vacuum. They're only interested in control and power. Yeah. Our side isn't. Well, guess what? I don't want people to get consumed with control and power. I don't. But we got to step it up because they will occupy every command seat that there is. When I was a college professor, I would say probably 80% of the professors were liberal, and maybe 5% were conservative or moderate, and 15% were radical. The 15% that were radical dominated. Because they got on all the committees, and they intimidated the 80% who were liberal, who were afraid to speak up, even though they knew in their heart of hearts things were wrong. We have to become somewhat more involved than we have been in the past. And I also think that people can also register some concerns with the corporations, whether if you have stocks or whatever, you know, go to meetings and things of that nature. I mean, what's happened to the corporate world is stunning to me, and it's happened so fast.
Yeah, let's go to Philadelphia next, Doctor. I have a minute or two left. Joe, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thanks.
Turn down the other here.
Yeah, great.
Great. Well, thank you. I follow you and Bill a lot, and I want to thank you for the great lead on these questions. Two observations. I think we got to continue to pray, obviously, morning, noonday, night, and step it up in the nation. But two questions to help address this liberalization and the onslaught of just the demise of our morals. So the first one is, how do we focus the most, or what do we focus the most on? Should it be abortion, so therefore we can knock down the most dominoes and get this thing on track? And number two, how do we galvanize our bishops to get them all onto the same page?
Well, I would say, listen, abortion has to be the preeminent issue,
Amen.
But I want to go back to what I said. Begin local. Begin with the schools. Because it always starts in the schools, and Drew is right to mention that it starts in the academy, as I said in the beginning of the half hour here, that it was it begins in the academy in higher education. But he's right to say it's down into K now. It's K through 12. So I think we have to take back our schools because that's the easiest way we can win on that. And as far as the bishops are concerned, for one thing, we can let the ones know who are doing a good job. I'll choose one. Kansas City Bishop Joseph Nauman, magnificent defender of life. We can let those people know how proud we are of them, and let other bishops know that if they're not speaking out enough, that we're somewhat disappointed in them. They need to hear from us as well. And it can't be just your local bishop, although you should begin with that.
Yeah, amen to that. Well, Doctor, thank you for your clarity, your passion, and all that you do. If people want to follow you, best way to do that, I'm assuming CatholicLeague.org, and they can sign up for your email there too, right?
That's absolutely it. CatholicLeague.org has all the information.
You check it out. And you can check out that article as well regarding the Hate America campaign. Take a short break. When we come back, I'll tell you about some Catholic revolutionaries who established America, and they were Catholic.
Connecting you to the true, good, and beautiful.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's good to be here. Thank you so much for joining me. And I love Dr. Donnie. He's fiery. He's on fire. And we are in a battle of ideologies in the country here. What's happened? I said a little bit earlier that our founding fathers are probably turning over on their grave. our rights, they come from God, right? They don't come from government. You know, everyone here, I think you know that. I mean, I feel like I'm preaching to the choir. You share my same passion. I think what happens is we don't know our history. You know, we've talked about the 1619 project in the country. When was the founding of our country, right? It was 1776. What was that Revolutionary War over? And who were some of these founding fathers? You know, there's some untold history that I think should be told. There's a new book out. It's called Liberty's Lions. And if you love American history, if you love your Catholic faith, I think this is a must for you to read. The Catholic Revolutionaries Who Established America is written by a guy named Dan Leroy. I had the book. I just started reading it. I haven't gotten all the way through it yet. Easy read, but it is fascinating. And, you know, he gets right to the point in his book. The primary goal of what he was doing in this book was to gather together in one place the significant contribution of Catholics to the American Revolution. And you might not know some of this stuff. I mean, the two Catholic carols, you know, one of the first bishops, the other was a sign of Declaration of Independence. You know, he addresses what Ben Franklin and John Adams and George Washington and other founders thought about Catholicism. What was it like to be in an early America like that? What role did American Catholics, you know, play in our founding and the first slave revolt? What kind of suffering did they go through? It's a excellent, excellent read, and I'll tell you how you get it. He's going to be joining me in a second. Of course, you're more than welcome to join me, too, if you ever want to get in on the conversation. You know the number, right? It's 888-914-9149. But, you know, I love history. I think we can learn a lot from our past. I think we can avoid a lot of problems by knowing our past. And I think it's got to be told honestly. And when you read histories of this great nation of ours, especially when you know, what you read growing up in schools, you know, the authors of those books, they taught a particular worldview. And, of course, that worldview was Protestant in nature. You know, you hear about the Puritans seeking refuge, right, from the persecution in Britain. We heard about the later exploits of men like George Washington and Jefferson and Franklin and Adams and some of the other founding fathers. But you know what you didn't hear? And I love this, and I want to do this one day. I want to travel to so many of these places. The very first Mass ever celebrated in our country, first Mass celebrated in U.S. soil, it took place in St. Augustine in Florida. It wasn't 1776. It wasn't, you know, in 1692. It was 1565. Although, and I've talked about this in the past, there are possibilities that other Masses could have been celebrated in our shores earlier than that. But we also, you probably didn't learn about the things like the Quebec Act, right? Which was considered the last straw by the colonists against their English overlords or you know, even more than the Stamp Act or the tax on tea. I mean, you know certain parts of history, but do you know some of this forgotten or untold history? The Quebec Act actually allowed the Catholics in the province of Canada to live their faith unhindered. Unlike Catholics in the 13 colonies, a very different world here. And again, we were under the constraint of Protestant governors. You know, being a Catholic in the New World was a tough thing to do, and more than likely, you might have only heard. I think a lot of people might know that John Carroll was the first Archbishop of the United States. Charles Carroll, the only Catholic signer on the Declaration of Independence, of course, the first senator of the state of Maryland, right, Maryland. So I always found that to be kind of cool. But both played very strong roles in our independence, in that whole independence movement of the country and the revolution itself. And that history is overlooked. But it's so essential to the development of the Declaration of Independence into the Constitution, especially the First Amendment, which we talk about a lot on this program, right? So joining me today is the man who wrote this book, Liberty's Lions. Dan Leroy joins me. He's documented a lot of this in his new book. It's available at Sophia Press. And the subtitle of the book, Liberty's Lions, is The Catholic Revolutionaries Who Established America. I'm actually enjoying the book. Like I said, I haven't gotten all the way through it. Easy read. And if you like your history, I think you're going to like that. He's an author. He's a journalist. He's a teacher. And it's great to have him here with me today. Good to have you, Dan. Good afternoon.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's a great pleasure. I just want to say I visited the site that you were talking about, St. Augustine, the site of the first Mass. That's something that everybody ought to see for themselves. I was lucky enough to see it, and that is a great, great piece of history.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, there's so many great places in this country that are, you know, the stamp of our Catholic faith on them. You know, one of the things you did, too, and I'm just curious, before we even talk about your book, your work has appeared in... I couldn't think of a more diverse array of publications. You got the New York Times, the Rolling Stones, the Village Voice, Newsweek, the Alternative Press, National Review. And when I look at the Village Voice and National Review, they're pretty opposite. They're pretty polarized. I have to ask you about your writing. I mean, that's pretty diverse. All those platforms pick you up. Why is that?
I don't know if you could thread that needle as easily today as I did when I started this 10 or 15 years ago. I'm a music guy first and foremost, and that's cool. The reason that you find some of that writing in some of the publications. You know, my favorite publication of all is the late and not always lamented Gene Simmons Tongue magazine.
Wow.
It didn't have a long run, but I was in there.
That's something else.
We did some stuff, yeah. So, you know, just to take it maybe a step further than that, you know, we hear all the time that we have to figure out ways to try to either engage with the culture or cut ourselves loose from the culture. And I think we're rapidly reaching a point where it might have to be the latter, but I do think that there's something to be said for having some knowledge of the culture and being able to speak to it without maybe being corrupted by it.
Brother, I'm with you 100%. And you know what? I think we are of this world, but not of the world. You know what I mean? We have to live in this world, but we're destined for a different place. And how do you transform it? We can't necessarily hide our heads in the sand. We have to infiltrate and be witnesses for our faith and for Christ. And the early church did that, and they brought tremendous, you know, conversion. And good always conquers evil. The country's in kind of a time of disorientation right now. There's no question in my mind about that. I was talking to Dr. Donahue about the battle of ideologies that we're seeing today. But that's why you and I have a duty. You know, you do it with your pen in a powerful way. I have a microphone. All of us can do it in our families and in our communities. And that's what this is all about. And I love your work. And I got to say, I'm glad because I love American history. And, of course, I'm a devout Catholic. I love my faith very much. What motivated you to take a look at the founding? I know you start the book talking about the Stono River slave rebellion back in 1739. I don't think many people even know about that. Most people think it was just an uprising of slaves who were, you know, fed up with the horrific conditions. But you seem to think that there was something more to it than that, including something Catholic?
There appears to be. And there's a lot that we don't know about that particular event. But one of the things that has been fairly well discerned is that at least some of the slaves who participated in that revolt were Congolese. They were Catholic. There were at least a couple of them who appeared to be pretty well educated. And there appears to have been some kind of element of Marian devotion that was a part of this riot. Yep. Now, we don't know that for sure because we don't have written records of any of this, but the research that's been done does suggest that this didn't come out of nowhere, that it was motivated at least in part by the faith of these Congolese Catholic slaves, and that perhaps what they were doing was trying to atone for some conditions that they found to go against what they knew as Catholics.
Yeah, that's fascinating. It's a little bit of history I don't think a lot of people know. Not many people have heard about the Quebec Act either. I was talking about that before you came on. Explain that. Give us a little history lesson, if you would. What was it? What role did it play in actually fueling the coming revolution?
Well, it was really, first and foremost, a very cynical, but also kind of brilliant ploy by the British. The British wanted to keep the French Canadians out of the revolution. And one way to do that was to extend to Catholics, who made up the majority of the population, the right to practice their religion as they saw fit. This was interpreted by a lot of the colonists, the Protestant colonists, as a provocation. In fact, we have a lot of the founders on record, folks like Alexander Hamilton, John Jay, who indulged in, you know, very open anti-Catholic sentiments as a result of the passage of the Quebec Act. It was a good decision by Britain, although clearly, as I say, it was cynical, because conditions for Catholics back in Britain were just about as bad as they were in the colonies. But they were trying to keep Canada out of it, keep them at least neutral and hopefully aligned with Great Britain. And it kind of worked and it kind of didn't work. That led to a pretty famous mission to Canada, which involved a couple of the guys that you mentioned earlier, Charles Carroll of Carrollton and John Carroll, who would become later the first Catholic bishop of the United States and later the first archbishop. And had he not gone on that mission to Canada and become friends with Benjamin Franklin, we don't know whether he would have ended up as bishop and archbishop, because Benjamin Franklin played a huge role in helping elevate him to those positions.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a moment, because I was, you know, we know that our founding fathers were deists. We live in a Protestant culture, and you got these Catholics. I'm assuming they're outnumbered, outgunned, so to speak. And I'm curious as to Franklin and to John Adams and to Washington and some of the other founders, what they thought of Catholicism. I mean, again, you go back and we have the Protestant Revolution. There's this great divide in Europe. How did they view Catholics in the New World, especially the founding fathers who put together these beautiful documents that we have?
I think most of the founders, if you put it on a continuum, most of them would tend toward the side that was either anti-Catholic or certainly had very little sympathy for Catholicism. Yeah. There are two guys among that group who really kind of stand out. One of them is Franklin. Franklin stands out because he was smart enough to kind of keep his positions, whatever they may have been, kind of under wraps. And John Adams at one point said, and he was kind of jealous about this, he said, you know, the Catholics think that Franklin's a Catholic and the Quakers think he's a Quaker. Franklin was one of those guys who could kind of be all things to all people. But the guy who did it best, and I don't think it ought to be a surprise to anyone, is George Washington. Yeah. George Washington gets a chapter in Liberty's Lions, and partly because he wasn't just a guy who was tolerant of Catholics, he was a guy who kind of walked the walk as well as talked the talk. Good example of that is when he took over the Continental Army in 1775, there were a series of celebrations that had gone on for a number of years called Pope's Nights all throughout New England. Sounds like it might be a fun Catholic event, but it really wasn't. It was a very anti-Catholic event motivated by memories of the gunpowder plot. It was really an excuse to get out, get drunk, burn the Pope in effigy. And when Washington becomes commander-in-chief, he says immediately, like, we're going to stop this.
Wow.
He put the kibosh on it and said, like, this is completely counterproductive. If we expect these people, Catholics, to contribute to this revolutionary cause, then we can't be doing things like this and antagonizing them publicly and discriminating against them. And he put a stop to it. And that's only one example, but it's an example that kind of demonstrates why Catholics at the time and since have viewed Washington so favorably. I think Washington figured out if you want to be the father of your country, you got to be the father of everybody. And that's something that a lot of the other founders, they were not able to make that determination.
Yeah, that's for sure. Now, Washington, of course, our first president was a Masonic deist. But, you know, there's some historical evidence. I had an author on, her name was Jan Connell. She wrote a book called The Spiritual Journey of Washington. I don't know how much credit to put into the book or not. It showed that he had some faith, Christian faith, but he may have even had a vision of the Blessed Mother, of a woman in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. What do you know about that?
What's actually mentioned, funny that you bring that up, because it is mentioned in this chapter about Washington and Liberty's Lions. The vision has kind of persisted.
Dan, I'll tell you what. I hate to do this to you, Dan. Hold the thought.
No.
Okay, just hold the thought. Let me take a quick break. I want to give you room. I don't want to cut you off. Stay with me. When we come back, we'll talk about this. Did George Washington have a vision of a beautiful woman in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania? We'll look at that and a lot more. Stay with me.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Stay with us.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Here at the Drew Mariani Show, we don't wave a political flag. We wave the Catholic flag.
Yeah, that's right.
Drew Mariani is here for you on Relevant Radio.
That's right. Giving you a look at life you're not going to find anywhere else. We're speaking with the author, Liberty's Lions, the Catholic revolutionaries who established America. And if you were just tuning in, we're taking a look at our founding, many of the pivotal figures in our nation's history. One of them, of course, George Washington. Everybody knows the stories about him. Did George Washington really chop down a cherry tree? You know, did he have a vision of the Blessed Mother? There is an author. Her name's Jan Connell. She wrote a book. I've had her on my program a number of times, and she would tell this story. In fact, Dan Leroy, he actually writes about it in his book, too. And before he tells the story, before he fills you in on what ultimately happened there, I just in terms of God's providence, I think God has a great mission, a great role for the United States of America. And I've said this before, and I'll probably say it a million times in the future. The role that our nation plays is not just to lead the world economically or militarily. We're one of the most generous nations in the world. I think we're also meant to lead the world spiritually. I think there needs to be a great conversion, a great revolution in this country towards God. You know, George Washington, of all of our great leaders, was certainly blessed by God's providence. By all accounts, I remember reading he should have been killed in the French and Indian War back in 1754, 63, whatever the time that was. He was miraculously saved, you know. There were all sorts of events which showed the hand of providence on Washington. So is it possible that the founding father of our country experienced an apparition of what is described, not as the Blessed Mother, but it's described as an angelic female. A lot of people interpret it as a mother of God during a very harsh trial in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. Now, whether the vision is authentic or not, a lot of controversy over that, but it is a tantalizing tale. And Dan Leroy is here to share that with you. I know you write about this in your book as well. You have to fill people in because I'm sure this is new and a surprise to many who are listening.
Yeah, it's a story that has kind of circulated for a number of years. It's generally known as Washington's vision. And it's as you described, it relates this tale that Washington, kind of in the depths of winter, at Valley Forge, is visited by this angelic-looking apparition of this woman who kind of shows him a series of scenes that grow increasingly apocalyptic. And at the end of this series of visions, she kind of points the way to the fact that America is going to emerge from all this. It's going to emerge whole, and that, you know, Washington is going to play an important role in leading it. Now, all the evidence that I've been able to find and that other people have been able to find suggests that this is probably a story along the lines of, as you mentioned, chopping down the cherry tree, throwing a silver dollar across the Potomac. It appears to have started life after the Civil War, toward the end of the, let's say the middle of the 19th century. And a lot of people believe that it was created by this guy, an author who was trying to drum up support for keeping the Union whole. And that makes a lot of sense. But there is one thing about it that I think a Catholic would hear and say, you know, I have to wonder. There are certainly some similarities to what happened at Fatima. When you look at the story about Washington's vision, and even if the story originated as late as people claim, well, Fatima doesn't happen until after this. So that's one of the things, when you call it tantalizing, I think A Catholic reader would look at that and say, I wonder.
Yeah. I love it. I'm so glad that you wrote this book. We have a few minutes left here. Because this is a big book. I just finished a book. They limited me to about 140 pages, but boy, I wish I could have had 400. I've got your book in my hand. It's almost, 400 pages? Maybe it is 400 pages here. It's a wonderful work. Two things here. One, what motivated you to address this particular topic? And then secondly, the role of Catholics in our founding. I'm all about truth. Whether George Washington had an apparition or not, I want the truth, right? Whether or not it's a tale or it's a reality. I want the truth about our founding as well. Why have the roles of Catholics been ignored? And maybe that's one of the reasons you wrote this book, but I'd love to have answers to both of those questions.
Well, it is, and they're kind of intertwined, I guess. The reason I think that Catholics have been underrated as far as their contributions to the Revolution, it's a numbers game. And the numbers will tell you that there were probably between 24,000 to 30,000 Catholics in the colonies during this time. So that's less than 2% of the population. And not all of those Catholics were patriots.
Right.
So it's pretty easy on that basis to say, well, Catholics couldn't have had much of an impact. But the raw numbers don't always tell you everything. The founders knew that themselves. And the numbers don't show that Catholics were, they weren't just patriots. They were leaders of this cause. They were leaders militarily, economically, intellectually, and of course, spiritually. And then the numbers cut two ways too, because it's true that only a small percentage of colonists were Catholics, but then you factor in the foreign soldiers who, let's face it, were pretty much the deciding factor toward the end of the struggle for independence. And then the numbers give you a little bit of a different story. You think about the contributions of Catholic troops from France, from Spain, from Germany, from Poland, you start to see how a number that is mentioned in the book, which is that as many as 70% of the soldiers who fought on the side of independence might have been Catholic. Okay, that's a little bit of a different picture than the one that we're used to. And the contributions of foreign countries to American independence, that they've been underrated almost since the Revolution itself. But when you include those people and you remember that lots and lots of them were Catholics, it puts the Catholic case for their significance in the role of American independence, it puts it in a somewhat different light, I think. So, and then the other part of that is just having all this stuff between two covers, as opposed to being in this book or that history. You put them all together, I hope it gives the argument a little bit more weight and mass.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. And if people want to get the book, best way to get it, I'm assuming, is online at any major bookstore.
Yep.
But also, do you have a website where you can get the book?
I do. And you can get it from directly from the publisher, sophiapress.com. And you mentioned all the other usual suspects, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Right. And my website is danleroy.com. And if you'd like a signed copy, I will sign one up and ship it out.
That's
to
awesome.
You, and you can get it right there through my website.
All right, so Sophia Institute Press, you can get the book. SophiaInstitute.com is their website. They're the publishers. Always good to support them. Of course, if you want a signed copy, who doesn't want a signed copy from the author, right? You can go to danleroy.com. Dan, thanks. Thanks for being here. Always good to talk about our faith and about our country. I love them both. I think patriotism and our faith are really inseparable. So keep up your good work.
Drew, it's a pleasure and a privilege to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. That's Dan Leroy. Check him out. Check out the book. Here's the title. Okay, it's called Liberty's Lions, The Catholic Revolutionaries Who Established America. And I do. I think it's a great read. As I said, I've only just begun the book, to read it. But it'll give you a look at our founding in a way that you may have never looked at it before. Just one final note. I only have a moment here left in the broadcast. God's providence. I really do believe the hand of providence has been on this nation. As I mentioned, Washington, by all accounts, should have been killed in the French Indian War. There was a battle in which Washington and British Army members were ambushed by the French, and every officer on horseback was killed. Every single one of them. except for Washington. He wrote to his brother, John, later. This was July of 1755, and he says, but by the all-powerful dispensations of Providence, I've been protected beyond all human probability or expectation. He says, for I had 4 bullets through my coat and 2 horses shot under me, yet I escaped unhurt, although death was leveling my companions on every side of me. See, when God has a mission for you, there's nothing that's going to stop you from that mission. There comes divine protection. There comes divine providence. And I think Washington was just that. Washington was only 23 when he faced that ordeal of death on the battlefield. He emerged unscathed, his faith deeper and stronger than ever. I believe God protected him. He became the military leader of the greatest war for independence ever fought in all of history. And I think it's a lesson for all of us on a spiritual plane too, right? God is in control of everything. You know what he did on June 1st, 1774, when the colonies were seeking God's will and making their decision whether or not to sever their ties with England? Washington wrote in his diary, went to church and fasted all day. A lesson for all of us. I'm Drew Mariani. Thanks for letting me be part of your afternoon.
Have Alexa? Just say, Alexa, enable the relevant radio skill. You can listen live, listen to any of our archived shows, or any of our recorded prayers.
For more information, go to relevantradio.com/Alexa.